Good afternoon and welcome to Dateline New Haven on WNHHFM New Haven's home for community radio. I'm Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make our community tick. Mary Fay is looking to make our community tick. She's one of the people coming into our studio so that New Haven could get to know some of the people who are looking to have statewide offices at the end of this year, 2022. Statewide election year, Mary Fay is running as a Republican for the nomination to be our state comptroller. Mary Fay, thank you so much for coming down from West Hartford and visiting with Dateline New Haven.
Great to be here, Paul, and thanks for the invite.
And great. I'm going to ask you to get a little bit closer to the mic. That's perfect. Almost like you're touching it, but not quite. So, Mary Fay, you're running for comptroller.
Yes.
And the first thing that I always pay attention to is a COMP troller, not C-O-N.
That's correct.
New Haven government, it's C-O-N. Do you know if there's a difference, or is that just like Last Will and Testament, that's like Scottish versus English?
Oh, my goodness. Well, they are synonyms of each other. I mean, there's slight differences, not to get into a technical discussion, but I started off with the Comptroller's Department at the Hartford in cost accounting, and they later changed their name to Controllers. So they're really the same, one and the same, and we're just Comptroller here.
If we ever figure out that mystery, then we can figure out why all city assessors assess property at 70% of the appraised value.
Right.
There's some crazy things just kind of baked into that thing makes no sense to me.
There's a lot of things that I think, we haven't updated a lot of things in eons. We're the state of city habits, and there's probably a time and place to do that.
And I mentioned before we're in the air, and one of the things that had not been updated is that we elect our comptroller.
We do.
Who has an important job, as I see it summarized, is you have three big jobs. One is that over day-to-day you oversee payroll and benefits for state employees and retirees.
Huge.
You cut a lot of checks.
65,000 people. Yeah.
65. You negotiate their health plans.
Yes.
And then you serve as the top fiscal watchdog. This is what comptroller candidates, I think, tend to talk about most.
Mm-hmm.
You do a monthly report to say how we're spending our money and if we're following the rules we were supposed to. Is that the idea?
Well, it goes really deep. First of all, it's overseeing the spending, the budget. 65,000 employees.
Yeah.
To manage just the payroll alone is gigantic. It's also an administrative position. I view it as the chief financial officer of the state of
CFO.
Connecticut. That's how I'm going to approach it. And
I'm trying to think of those two. There's a budget director, so that's kind of crafting the rules for how we'll spend the money.
Yeah.
And then the treasurer invests our money.
Correct.
But the comptroller is making sure payroll gets met, benefits are being met, and that.
Yeah.
But the watch.
And then the forecasting. So I think a lot of people get frustrated in our state when we go from a huge deficit and we increase taxes to cover that. And then all of a sudden, several months later, right before an election, we've got a windfall in terms of a surplus.
Isn't the idea we're supposed to raise the taxes and then keep them there when the money starts rolling in so that we can spend what we want to spend and get reelected?
The one thing about this position that really, really intrigues me and is interesting, it's independent. If you're an accountant, I'm an accounting by training, and I've spent a lot of times in finance, and I've run retirement plans at the senior leader, executive officer of the retirement and healthcare. So I know and can go very, very deep on these subjects and how they should work. There's a whole way you can structure benefits. I've done that. And somebody mentioned earlier that a lot of these organizations, whether it's states, municipalities, or even companies, can't afford the healthcare and retirement pensions. I've helped redesign those at Hartford Healthcare.
And part of that's out of the
survive.
Part of it is whether we fully fund them.
Well,
one of the great bipartisan agreements in our state has been to always underfund. Right, pensions and retirement plans and healthcare plans, at least we have for at least 40 years.
Yeah.
And the last couple of governors have tried to address that, right?
They have, but there are solutions. And I'm not a fan of bonding liabilities. It just cements them over a 40-year time period. It's a fixed cost. You can't do anything. There's other ways to fund them. I think there's terminal funding where we can get the liability completely off our books and let an insurance company take it over, which is their expertise. They do mortality tables, and they know how long the money should last. We got to clean up our balance sheet, and the debts and the burdens and the unfunded liabilities are too great. Maybe the surplus can go towards some of that. That's something I'd like to see. I don't think you should attack it all at once. It's going to take time to get there.
What is the extent of the problem, the liability? How underfunded are we?
Oh, my God. We're the worst in the country. So what I'm focused on, aside from the controls and knowing how to do accounting and healthcare and retirement, is I want to get off the bad list. We're the highest in terms of debt. We're the highest in terms of unfunded liabilities. We're the highest in terms of taxes. We're the lowest economic recovery of all 50 states. We've got to change that. It's really, really difficult.
So it's the first two that comptroller would be able to deal with, right? You want to be able to deal with...
Yeah, I think financial position is extremely important. It gives you a lot more flexibility.
And,
the solution is to raise taxes, but that's not creative, that's not innovative, and that's not anything that anybody could do. So I think the reason that the party is important, and the only reason, because this is an independent position, is because we've had decades and decades and decades of Democrat rule, and we're no better for it. So I think they've had their chance, 40, 50, 60 years, depending on how you count.
But wait a second, the governor has been a Republican for 20 years, an independent starting from 1990 to 2010.
Well, that's the governor, but his legislators in the House and the Senate weren't.
Okay, that's the point we'll take.
They were completely unbalanced.
But they did have to negotiate. I mean, Roland and Rell are just as much as O'Neill and Weicker, and Malloy. They all have fingerprints on underfunding.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's why I'm excited that this position is independent. There's no blame to be cast. It's like, how do we get out of this mess?
Yeah.
And a lot of folks created it because they took the easy way out. And so this is nonpartisan. It should be anyway.
So maybe just can we give people a sense? You say we're number one in the state for unfunded liabilities or underfunded liabilities. What is the number?
Oh gosh, it's like $1 billion. It's huge. I mean, just West Hartford's was, a couple hundred million. So it's,
and is that mostly retirement?
Well, it's the defined benefit plans mostly that were put in place. They have moved off, but there's so many people that are still in it. And
you're
they
talking
do
about
things,
the tiers that Malloy started.
Correct. And they do things, overtime counts towards the pension, so that you can double your pension by working a lot of overtime.
And again,
overtime.
That's just a little rules tough. So comptroller could point that out and propose, but when they negotiate with the state labor union, that's the legislature and the governor, correct?
It is, but I believe that the comptroller should be at the table.
Okay.
Because they have the unbiased view. They're supposed to. They're supposed to. And it's just a factual job. You present the facts. You play straight with the accounting. We're bound by ethics and fiduciary responsibilities. I also have an MBA in finance as well. Numbers. I used to sign off on 10-Ks and annual reports. I take the compliance and the factual part of the job very, very seriously.
So $1 billion unfunded liabilities. How would you address it?
Oh, the surplus is a perfect example. Every time you have something like that, you should do something that helps the taxpayers. And helping to fund these liabilities will do that. So put part in that, put part in the rainy day fund, maybe reduce a tax there's so many taxes, inheritance taxes, small businesses pay a lot of taxes. Cut some of those so we can get back on the track to prosperity. We need companies to come here. We need jobs to come here.
But in terms of the underfunded liability specifically, so partly you'd use some of the surplus, and that was an argument between the Republicans and the Democrats, and we had a large surplus.
Right.
What do you have other ideas about so we get off the bad list?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think I've been on pension boards and whatnot. Look at the assumptions. A lot of this...
So you're talking about not exaggerating the return.
Right. So I think one of the things that I'm able to do as well is to crystallize and clearly communicate what the problem is and how to solve it. So make sure that the assumptions behind the pensions are correct. And the market, obviously, interest rates are low, so make sure those are correct. And you just got to start chipping away at it. There's no hard rule that you have to be at 100%. Although I think people would rest more assured who are going to collect these pensions if we were better funded, because
what are we at
there
now?
Is a risk. I don't want to make up a number. I don't know, but it's low.
New Haven, we were as low as 30 and 40, and they're saying you're not supposed to be 100, but they want you up at 70.
Right.
West
Hartford was in the 20s, think the state is in a similar position. I'll come back and have all the numbers.
Mary
in front of me.
Faye,
I just wanted to introduce.
The Republican nomination for comptroller. She's a West Hartford councilwoman with a long career in finance and civic work and government. So Ned Lamont's a Democratic governor.
He is.
And he did get praised by Wall Street. Our bond rating improved. Mm-hmm. And the Wall Street Journal, of all places, lauded him in an editorial for saying that he was starting to do some of what you're suggesting, to be more responsible with long-term finances, not solving short-term problems. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, one thing he got credit for from the bond rating agencies was not using the surplus to pay down the liabilities. Am I wrong about that?
I think that's wrong. Yeah, I don't. But the ratings are extremely important. That determines your bonding capability.
Right.
So having a solid rating.
How much you pay for interest? So he did improve it. They said.
Yeah, I think there's around the corners. There's been some. We've lucked out certainly with a booming real estate market, which rises all tides. I think it helps people. We've seen people come to our state, so we're not in net redemption of people leaving for the first time in eons. So there are some positive signs from this current administration. But again, the comptroller really oversees all of this. So I think, well, one thing that I'm concerned about is approving the comptroller is the end of the rope in terms of approving these large state contracts.
Mm.
And we've had some.
You have to sign off on them.
Yes.
I didn't know that. So what do you have
to
sign off?
There's very hard and fast rules. Before you have a contract, award a contract, it's got to go up on the Secretary of State's site and let people compete for it. So it's got to be bid on. So we're not doing that in all cases. And certainly, people who are vying for the governor's job are pointing out that Governor Lamont and Comptroller Lembo approved Annie Lamont's company for testing. So I think we need to be cleaner on impacting our
rules.
And what
does the comptroller sign off on? What part? You have to assess that the rules are followed or that the finances are kosher? What exactly?
Everything. All the ethics and compliance and the rules for that the government has designed to follow are followed. And there's other people responsible. The Secretary of State should look at make sure that's on the website. So I don't think that happened either.
You're part of a team. Yeah.
Yeah, it's part of a team. And so there's certain pieces that have to go. And I want to work with everybody. I mean, you pointed out the budget. That is OPM, but I think that's more budget policy than the actual numbers.
Office of Policy Management.
Yeah.
And Mary Faye, tell me a little more about the monthly report that the comptroller issues in the watchdog role. How is that different from the state auditors? So state auditors are Republican and Democrat who work together to kind of look at an account in depth every month to see where money isn't being spent the way it should be or if it is.
Right.
You give a more global view, correct?
Yes,
the report you would issue?
Okay, so I can use a real-life example. When I was signing off on all these financial statements and my team was putting them together for a publicly traded company, the SEC is overseeing it. The banking institutions are overseeing it. A lot of oversight. My responsibility was to make sure that they were accurate and correct. Now, the auditors come in and look for different things. They go a lot deeper. So they're going to look at the chart of accounts, which there's thousands of.
But they do it random. Sure. Am I wrong about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, they are. But municipalities and states do have an audit from an outside group. We have one in West Hartford.
Oh, I was thinking of the state auditors. Okay.
Yeah. So there's the state auditors within that are really there to snoop out fraud and violate.
As a reporter, I remember we always loved when Jake was there, and I forget the other guy in Johnson, whatever, they report every month, you know, it's like a William Proxmire type thing.
Yeah. And they're supposed to sniff out things and inappropriate, you know, transactions and whatnot. So you need both, but then you've got the outside auditors that come in that are CPAs, and they verify that the statements are true to the best of their ability. And
what does the comptroller do?
He prepares those statements. He makes sure, and he oversees it from an internal standpoint, but having that extra safeguard of an annual audit from an outside accounting firm is extremely important.
What I meant is that when you're going to play the role of watchdog, what questions are you going to be looking at
to
do that monthly report?
Yeah, I would look at, well, first of all, in terms of accounting transactions, you want to make sure that everything is in compliance with either GAAP accounting or statutory accounting.
That's generally accepted accounting principles.
Correct. Yeah. So that's the first most. And that tells you how you defer things, when you can capitalize things, when you can amortize things. So there's no shenanigans, there shouldn't be, with any of the financial reporting, because there are hard and fast accounting rules that you need to adhere by. So I know what they are, and I would stick to those. And I'm not saying that anybody's doing anything wrong, but those were some of the things that I would attack right away. Just make sure that we're in compliance with all the
accounting
rules.
We're still a $20 billion budget, right, approximately?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you want to make sure $20 billion, even if nobody's playing hanky-panky, a lot can go wrong with $20 billion.
Sure. And believe me, it's a juggling act of how to manage that. We've got inflation, so that's a real-life fact. Boy, I wish that would calm down. We're all facing that in the grocery stores. But, you know, government faces that, too, with the things they need to buy and the services they need to provide. Wages are certainly something. But I would make a note that there's always opportunities for savings and for trimming your budget. So, one of the things that I'm used to doing in business, which I'd like to translate over, is instead of rolling the budgets forward. So if it's $20 billion, then you start at $20 billion and then you add in your increases. I'd like to start from zero and just say, what do you really need? Let's really, really think about
this. Is that
this.
A matter of going in line item, seeing if they weren't fully spent so that maybe
yeah.
you don't just move from one to the other, although sometimes a little flexibility in your management is needed if there's a crisis, but not everything's a crisis.
Sure, and hopefully that you would have an emergency fund set up someplace where if that happened, you could put that in.
But we're doing pretty well with the rainy day.
Yes, yes, thank God. That's been all over the place, hasn't it, over the recent years? It's been...
Well, the markets. Yeah.
So you got to be careful. I'm very conservative in nature, and certainly that's the treasurer's job. But when I look at the comptroller compared to the other positions, it's really the workhorse of the organization. Mm. There's so much responsibility. There's so many dollars involved. There's so many different processes involved. There's so many different operations. You know, the attorney general has 100 lawyers in their department to help them out. I don't know how many accountants are and comptrollers. We'll figure that out. I'll start looking at that now. I just announced, you know, last week.
Are you the only Republican running?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. And I've gotten great kudos and encouragement from the party.
And Kordick says, to Kordick, thank you for listening to Dateline New Haven. No more Democratic controllers. This commenter took a split down the middle, C-O-N, but then P, trollers. We need Republican comptrollers instead. Democrats spend money. Republicans save money. Big difference. Thanks for the comment. You're listening to Dateline New Haven, WNHHFM, New Haven's home for community radio. Mary Faye speaking with us, the first officially declared candidate for comptroller. There's a Democrat, Sean Scanlon, who is exploring. We think he's going to get in there too. Mary, so you've started answering the question right before this. Why do you want to be the state comptroller?
Yeah. So, first of all, I've been extremely blessed in my career, and I'm thankful for that. And it's really taught me a lot, and I've learned a lot in about leadership and about finance. So that's been fantastic. But I've always been looking for a way to give back. You know, I'm a product of a school teacher. My mom was a school teacher in East Hartford, where I grew up, and my dad worked at United Technologies and manufacturing and a couple other places, and they always gave back, you know, whether it was to our church or my mom did Girl Scouts and Campfire Girls. My father coached baseball for eons and Cub Scouts. I've always done something.
So you grew up like a kind of civic type family.
Oh, God, yeah. And I really enjoy it. I mean, that's what life's about. And I never had the opportunity to do it while I was working. I did give back in other ways. When I was in Boston, for example, I was on the board of the overseers for Newton Wellesley Hospital. That's where most of our employees went. So just to make sure the hospital was supported.
And just so people know, you're talking about your career. So are you currently in finance?
No, I'm actually just focused on public service right now. So I'm the third term town councilor in West Hartford, a minority leader. That was an incredible election. We had 9 people vying for those 3 minority seats. And I'm really, really proud that we swept. So it was a very interesting, high-profile election, and I'm happy to talk about that next time I come back. But that's been a great...
But in your career, you were finance executive. So you worked for GE, Sun Life, and AIG, right?
Yes, and ING and the Hartford.
And you've been in sort of the comptroller-type jobs in private companies.
Yes.
You began your career as a cost accountant at the Hartford.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, you have a long civic career. In addition to currently being on the West Hartford Town Council, you've been on the library board in West Hartford. You coached youth basketball.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love it. I played in college and high school.
Okay. What position?
Center in my day, believe
it or not.
You
were center?
Yes.
You're not that tall, are you?
I was 5'9". Who knows what I am right now? In those days, that's true.
I remember there were some teams even. I remember back in the 70s, there were some even professional teams who had 6'8" centers. So do you remember anything about playing center? Like what? Where was the school?
Oh, I loved it. Well, Penny High School, and actually in East Hartford was where I played in high school. I started as a varsity player my freshman year, and John Larson, Congressman Larson, was our coach. So, and he was a great coach. He really and truly was.
Coach Larson.
And Maureen Rogers, another, or English.
What did you learn from Larson? Obviously, you know why I'm asking you this question. What did you learn from John Larson as your coach in basketball?
Wow. He was tough, and he was relentless, believe it or not. Always fair. Really good guy. But if you weren't, you know, running hard, or you weren't in practice. Our practices were intense. He was very good at basketball and strategic with our plays. And I think he took a bunch of kids who weren't excellent, and he took us far. I
mean, I'm guessing that was really the 70s, late 70s?
80s. No, 70s. I graduated from high school in 1979.
Right. You and I are year apart. So
yeah.
Back in those days, basketball was much more of a collective pursuit, right? There wasn't a lot of dunking. There wasn't a lot of showboating. Yeah. So that was 1979, and then
but it was still very physical. Back in those days, I think about that, and he was very good at building teams. Our team was very close on and off the court, and I think we were good students. And we you know, he wanted the whole package. He was very focused on our studies and making sure that we weren't cutting corners on anything. He was good. I really respect him.
So interesting, obviously, to me from a distance is that because John Larson becomes a leader in the state legislature. Now he's a Democratic congressperson from the Hartford area.
Yeah.
And you went on 2 years ago to run for Congress as a Republican against your former coach.
I did.
Did you guys joke about that? Did you get along? Did you do a tap dance on each other?
Oh, it was funny. The press
no scandals about when he hid the Gatorade in the locker room or anything like that.
Oh, goodness. No, but you know, he always had that political bent. And he taught honors history as well, which I was in his class. So I was a student as well.
Okay.
And my sister, too. And my mom was a teacher in East Hartford with his children. So, you know, it kind of goes back. And he's a hard person not to like. He truly is.
Right. That's why he's successful in politics.
Yeah. But
what happened when you ran against each other?
Well, I think we ran really well. And I did better than anybody who's ever challenged him. And I only ran a 5-month campaign.
That's a tough district. Yeah.
It's a very tough district. But this is in my, once it gets in your blood, it's in your blood.
So in the campaign, did you guys stay civil?
Did
you talk about AP history?
It was so funny when the reporters called me and they said, we just talked to Congressman Larson and he had really nice things to say about you and your family. I said, well, I have nice things to say about him too, but I don't agree with his policies. So that's really where it started. I think we're all really concerned about the Connecticut economy. We're concerned about people hurting. We're concerned about our defense industry. You know, United Technologies. I know Congressman Larson's dad worked there too. It was just such a stalwart and such a steady eddy in the town of East Hartford. And it's you see the sign. It's Raytheon now. It just, what's happening here? GE, my former employer that I loved working for, they're gone.
Boston.
It's really serious. And, you know, even my previous career in financial services, we've got operations here, but not the senior teams. They're all elsewhere. So, you know, I really got involved in this on the economic side because personally, I was commuting, you know, 6 or 7 hours away and leaving my family behind Monday to Friday just to get a job to provide for us. So it's real. It really is real.
That's true. The kind of jobs you were in were at corporate offices.
Yeah, exactly.
So if they were not in Connecticut, you weren't in Connecticut. So
no.
You've been on the West Hartford Town Council, and there you focused on the very issues you want to focus on if you're a comptroller of the state.
Yes.
You focused on the Finance Budget Administration Committee. We talked about how the issues there about underfunded pensions would seem pretty big in West Hartford, you know, as a subset of what's happening here. Tell me about a day that you were on the West Hartford Council where something happened that you learned something or said, this is what it's about, inspired you to take the next step to try to seek state office.
Wow, so many. One thing that we've been trying to do to speak for the taxpayers of the town is, and I'm really proud of this, we 2 years ago, last term, we had a flat budget and we did not raise our income taxes because...
Well, they don't have income tax in...
I mean, I'm sorry, property taxes.
Yeah.
Jeez. I'm already thinking about the comptroller job.
Okay. Sorry, and it is crazy in our state. It's all, you know, property taxes.
But yeah, so it's a real big concern. And we've taken measures like putting in accessory dwelling units, which I'm not for.
That's so interesting. So
to help people,
just so people know what that shorthand is, you're allowed to add another unit by right, which is part of a different fascinating debate. Some of those ones, like we're talking about COVID, where I feel it's interesting because everyone wants to rip each other's throat out, but nobody really knows for sure, right? The theory is, if you gradually let people add the unit, you can keep housing prices down by having more supply. Mm-hmm. We never know if that's the way it works in the real world. And when you have investors who don't live on the property, are they really just trying to milk the properties and raising taxes? So why were you against ADUs in West Hartford?
Yeah, well, I think it's a slippery slope for one. I think we're a very crowded town. We have small lots, building lots. Houses are on a quarter of an acre or less even.
It's a nice town.
It's a beautiful town. I love living there. I'm very proud of being a West Hartford resident. My daughter goes to the public schools. She's doing well. It's a great town. I won't live anywhere else in Connecticut. I just love it there. But we do have financial and economic issues with older people, especially. They can't afford to live there, and they go to adjoining towns, Farmington or Bloomfield, where it's less property taxes. So the ADUs, I mean, that's intended to be a funding mechanism to help people, you know,
stay
pay
in
their
house.
Taxes. But I'm just thinking, why don't we just work on the bigger problem of getting taxes to a reasonable level?
Well, so, the argument there is, as you're familiar, is that the one way you get taxes to a reasonable level is you're able to rent out the unit to get
you
more
grow your grand list, which is important too. And so I'm really, really
but there are costs. Yeah,
yeah. I'm excited about the economic development we're doing. The New Park Avenue is looking really good, and we're trying to do some work on New Britain Avenue and make more transportation centric so people can, you know, do away with their cars.
And I mentioned also that you were in the minority.
Yes. So going back to that, you were really playing
the leading role in keeping an eye on the finances from outside the party.
Correct.
And tell me what something you did there that made you think you could do that kind of thing on a statewide level if, by chance, the Republican Party, which has a lot fewer voters than Democrats or independents, does not elect the governor and you'd be in the role of watchdog from another party.
Yeah. So, first of all, this is a competency job. So I hope people see that. It's not a popularity contest. Who can really do the job? Who's got the skills? Mm-hmm. And then in terms of being in the minority, speaking truth to power is not something I shy away from. So I put forward a no tolls resolution in my first term. It did not succeed, but we
advisory resolution to the state.
Yeah. Our mayor puts them forward quite often, and so this we felt was important because the majority of taxpayers don't want tolls, and we wanted West Hartford, which is a neighboring state of Hartford. It's an important town, and it's one that's very visible. We wanted to make a statement. So we did that again on this term recently, the last term that just concluded, with a crime resolution, anti-crime resolution. It was passed in three towns. I'm still not successful in getting it over the goal line, but it at least is being referred to committee. So we want people to feel safe. Their cars, the catalytic converters, the crimes that are being committed when these cars are stolen, the drive-bys, we just got to put a stop to that. And these guys are catch and release, and we know that doesn't work. So we're trying to really address global issues that impact everybody. It's not a part. I don't think either one of these are a party initiative, no tolls or reducing crime. To me, that's just common sense.
So before I let you go, when you grew up or now, did you have a role model in politics? Someone you said, that's the kind of person who makes a difference, and I'd like to be like that person.
Oh, goodness. I loved Ella Grasso. And that just shows the nonpartisanship. I really did. And actually, I remember this distinctly. Congressman Larson, I was in the band also. I played an instrument.
Clarinet.
Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to learn piano now.
Learning piano at our age is interesting because you got two hands at once, and the upper staff and the bottom staff. Clarinet.
It's harder than it looks.
Yes, I don't think I could do it now.
Oh, my goodness. So he took us down. He took the band down to the Hartford Civic Center for the Democrat convention. And it was so exciting. We played for Ella and
Female governor in Connecticut.
It got into my blood. And I loved U.S. history. And I even was a government minor in college. Liberal arts school, Skidmore, so in accounting. And so I've always felt compelled to do something. But in terms of role models, I really liked Ella. I loved her. I thought President Reagan was good in terms of his leadership and moving the country forward.
What about Ella Grasso?
Oh, she was just so human. She was so relatable. I'll never forget that bad snowstorm that we had.
Well, that was her defining moment.
Oh, my goodness. Did she make the most of it? She wasn't on vacation. She wasn't in Florida. She was here. And she was eating egg salad sandwiches.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Holding those daily briefings at the emergency center where this was kind of before the day when we had superstorms all the time.
And turning the armory.
She was beloved in the state.
Yeah. She really was. But I think she was real. And I think that's what people really...
I think I got the sense she really had the pulse of the voter.
Oh, yeah.
She really understood Connecticut.
Yeah, because I should disclose this, too. It's only fair. I was a Democrat. I grew up, I described my growing up where my mom was a Democrat, my dad was a Republican. And we learned so much because there wasn't arguing and bickering. I mean, they were married for 60 years, we used to laugh and call it a mixed marriage.
Who was the Republican?
My dad.
And who did the checkbook?
My mom. She was good with money. She really and truly was.
Democrats are a little more fiscal. Yeah.
but that's the kind of Democrat that I was, a Kennedy Democrat. And when I saw things just going too far to the left and the intolerance and mostly the financials, the economic condition of our state, I said, these guys have had, decades. We need somebody who really knows the numbers and can turn this around. So I'm really excited about this.
Well, it was a pleasure to meet you, Mary Fay. Thank you for coming all the way down from West Hartford to New Haven, Studio WNHH-FM.
My pleasure. This is statewide, so I'll be everywhere all the time.
Best of luck getting the nomination. Do you have an opponent? Because I remember there was a primary last time. They both came on air here.
Yeah.
Kurt from Seymour. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Right now, no. Well, other than legislator
Democrat,
from, Sean. I don't know him. I've never met him. So I'm looking forward to that.
All right. Well, I look forward to talking to you again in the future. You'll come back if you win.
I'd love to. There's plenty of time between now and November.
All right.
So I'll
That's
be back for sure.
And thanks for joining us. And we're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Feel to Be Free from the group CD A Plea for Peace. This is Paul Bass inviting you to fly free with us day and night at WNHH. New Haven's home for community radio.